think I can handle it?
Very good then, Mr. McGinnis. Welcome to my world.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice.
And welcome to our day four. The party's over, folks. San Diego Comic-Con has come to a close, and we've had not one, not two, but three great podcasts so far. The Hall of Justice is, you know, when we're on episode 100, we'll laugh at this, but I really want to thank my friend Ming Chen for sitting with me for the last three nights, now a fourth. San Diego Comic-Con was an event that I wanted to cover somehow. We came up with this idea. He was just as instrumental in coming up with the idea, so he gets at least half of the credit, if not more. But it's been a really, really fun experience. We're glad you've downloaded. We're glad the reaction has been great so far from what I've heard. I haven't heard a ton, but I have heard that the numbers are positive and everything's looking up. So I really want to thank everybody because we're going to make this a lot of fun. Ming, we did it one more time. Now, before we get to anything, did you go to a burlesque show last night?
I did. I wrapped this up and I left and I went to see some burlesque. Now, usually the burlesque I see is they've been doing them a lot at Comic Cons now, and they'll do it. They call it nerdlesque, where the girls are dressed up, and sometimes guys are dressed up as they're cosplaying, and then they do the burlesque, which is way more fun than the traditional burlesque. And the one I went to kind of had. It lost that edge and wasn't as fun as, you know, say, watching Catwoman doing it or Rogue or Harley Quinn. Harley Quinn's one of the more popular ones. But it was fun. And it was a great time. But not as good as this. So I thank you for letting me come on here. And people who know me know that, you know, once. All you have to do is utter the word podcast, and I'm there. It's kind of like Michael Keaton and Beetlejuice. It's not that hard.
You're just in. And we'll get to all the stuff. My favorite Con TV story about what you were just saying is when we were in Las Vegas, we booked a panel. There were about five guests that we had booked for an Avengers discussion. It was right before Age of Ultron came out. And we got this set up. We had two artists and two cosplayers. They were professional cosplayers. I said, "What's a professional cosplayer?" Yeah. They said, "Don't worry, you'll see." And they show up, and we were checking because there was traffic. So we were checking on email. Are you on schedule? Are you going to be there on time? Like, just normal. My producer was doing normal producer stuff, you know? And one of the emails comes back. This is about 10 minutes before air. And one of the cosplayers replies with, "Just so you know, we're in body paint. We're not wearing any clothes."
just a heads up. So none of you old men over there get a heart attack.
If you can see my Twitter feed, look at the photos on my Twitter feed. You'll see these girls.
I don't even know if I have to look at your Twitter feed. I'm betting good money that I may know one or both of them personally. So.
Oh, really? Are we mutual? Because we're friends on Facebook. So yeah. They're both on my Facebook. And I put the pictures. I didn't tag them. I probably should have. But one of them was dressed as Captain America. And the other one was dressed as Thor. And it was like, so I'm moderating a panel. And I had it was a show. We did a show. And we're on a set. There's cameras. There's, you know, a director. And I literally had to say, "Can we just get the pink elephant out of the room there and just acknowledge that I was standing with artist guys, you know, these Billy Martin was one of them. I remember him. I apologize. I can't remember the second artist, but I remember those two cosplayers, man. They were two naked women telling me about how great Avengers was going to be. It was one of the weirdest, most surreal things I've done since getting into this comic booky world. So
yeah, and yet I'm sure they look great, and even better, I'm sure they knew their stuff too, which is great. I think it's cool that professional cosplay is a thing. I mean, shoot, man, if I could do it, I would do it, but I don't have the right attitude, body type, or I just don't really dress up in costume. I am my own living cartoon character, most people tell me, so I don't need to dress up. But nice. That is cool, and yeah, I'm sure there was plenty of body paint in San Diego, I have no doubt.
Yeah, I'm sure. All right, so let's get to some of the headlines, some things that we wanted to tackle. If yesterday the big story at the beginning of the day was Batman v Superman, and you know, I've still seen that trailer 6 more times. Then Saturday night was taken over by DC Television, and DC Television has taken, I think, the genre by storm. Between Arrow and then the last year, The Flash, Gotham, and of course now Supergirl. There's so much there. There's so much material right there. So we can do it just kind of show by show. The biggest thing I took. First of all, to me, The Flash, I said it yesterday, and I stand on this. The greatest television show of last season was season one of The Flash, and that is including Netflix's Daredevil, which was phenomenal, but I give that much credit to The Flash. If I had to pick one, it was what the people at CW had done with The Flash. Now, they teased a couple of things coming, including the arrival of Earth 2 Jay Garrick.
Wow. Like, what? Yeah.
And then they're calling him Zoom, but from what we understand, it's Hunter Zolomon, who was another one of the reverse Flashes. And Tom Cavanaugh is still in it. So this whole idea that Harrison Wells, who had been killed, then was replaced by Eobard Thawne. Eobard Thawne was taken out of continuity when Eddie Thawne committed suicide. Supposedly Tom Cavanaugh's Harrison Wells still exists, which yes. is fascinating, because if Thawne never kills Harrison Wells, now he's getting the chance to be a completely new character. And it's one of the things I wanted to bring up, because I'm curious to know how likable Harrison Wells will be and how much of an impact he can have. Does he have the same role? And if you think about it, wasn't it Eobard Thawne who helped Barry become the Flash? So why is he the Flash anyway?
Right. These are like comic book story, hardcore comic book storylines that we're going to be seeing on TV, which, the running thing I've had is that, you know, they have to dumb these things down for the mainstream TV audience. This is stuff that geeks like us would only read about in comic books. So This is pretty awesome. And, you know, to even utter the words Earth 2 on a TV show, that's pretty awesome. So, I mean, if you look, it looks like their season 2 is going to be, they're introducing time travel. They're introducing multiverses. So they can bring back dead characters. They can bring back anybody. They can introduce anybody. This is awesome.
I mean, it's just a comic book fan's fantasy show. Like, they have everything. And, you know, Jeff Johns or whomever is responsible for just creating this or just getting the ball rolling on this really picked the right guy. They just picked the right comic book character, because there's just so much story. I was always a big Flash fan. Now, I don't deny the fact. Have you and I discussed the Wally West theory?
I don't think so. What is your Wally West
theory? Okay, Wally West theory to me is this. When they cast John Wesley Shipp, I wanted John Wesley Shipp to play Barry Allen. I didn't yes. want him to be Henry Allen. Right. I thought he could be Barry Allen, and the kid, Grant Gustin, I call him a kid. He's a grown man,
he's a kid.
He's a kid to us. He could be Wally. And I think yes. you could have had the same story. Like, you could have done everything the same. Like, it just could have been the same show, because when they eventually introduce Tina McGee, Amanda Pays as Tina McGee, and Mark Hamill as the first trickster, you could have done a complete continuity with the original CBS Flash show. they chose not to do that. It's not a criticism. I'm just thinking, I had this theory that you could have made him Wally. Now they're saying that Wally West is going to appear, and it's got to be New 52, which I'm sorry, I was a pre-New 52 Flash reader.
Right.
So look, this is not a racist statement, but you know, now Wally West has to be black because he's the cousin of Iris, right? Or he's the nephew. What is he now in the New 52? Is he still Iris's nephew?
I believe so. I'm going to have to relook that. I'm going to have to look that one up.
How old is she that she has a nephew?
I'm going to have to look that one up too. I don't know her exact birth date from the New 52 Iris.
Right, like that, I'm not crazy, right?
No, you're not. You're not. You're not.
I have no problem. Look, Wally West can be black. I don't care. Right. It doesn't bother me. I just thought, I don't know. Again, it's just change for change's sake. Grant Gustin could have been Wally West if you wanted to really continuation.
As a hardcore longtime fan, yeah, that's how you would have done it. And I would have liked to seen that too. I love that John Wesley Shipp is back in the new Flash. Can you imagine, you know, you're on that show for one season in 1990, and then 14 years later, you get that call.
Come back.
Hey, we want you back. You're not going to be the Flash, but you'll be Flash's father. Like, you know, like, are you good with this? Like, who is this? Is this a joke?
Can you imagine? You know, like,
yeah, exactly. Can you imagine just getting that call? It's like, we want you back. It's like, oh, all right. I've been writing for 14 years.
Is there anything like? This sounds gushy because I'm not trying to be, but you know, yesterday we criticized Star Wars, we criticized Batman v Superman, and I thought our criticisms were legitimate. I don't take any of them back. Doesn't mean we don't love both properties.
No, we criticize.
What about the Flash? What can we criticize? Like there, I don't know what to criticize when it comes to the Flash.
I can't find too much. I mean, the tone is great. The acting is great. The people they're bringing in are great. I don't have too many criticisms. Right. I mean, the first season was great. So we're very lucky. We're very, very lucky.
No kidding. No kidding. And then there was Arrow, where Arrow, which, you know, look, the things that you can say about Arrow. I love that there's an you live in Monmouth County, right? Right.
Man? I do. Monmouth County, New Jersey. Yes.
So you know Arrow exterminating? This is a very New Jersey comment, but do you know Arrow exterminating? I'm giving them a plug here.
No, I don't. There's a place called Arrow Exterminating.
They do home inspections. They do like termites and home inspections.
Okay, they're bug killers.
In my bookmarks, every time I try to Google Arrow, I get Arrow exterminating.
Oh, it just comes up automatically. Instead of looking up news on Arrow, the TV show, you get exterminators.
Right. Anyway, I get the exterminator. But Oliver Queen wore his costume, Stephen Amell, which, by the way, if there's ever been a star who just gets social media, Stephen Amell is just brilliant. Did you see what Stephen Amell did on Twitter today?
I did not. What did he do?
He said, everyone I met at San Diego Comic-Con was absolutely adorable, nice, except for M. Night Shyamalan's publicist. She was a blank.
Wow. he called her out? Like, seriously?
He just called her out. He just called her out. He campaigned for Josh Donaldson to make the All-Star team in baseball. Yes. He said that he would show up at Safeco Field in full costume if he could sing the national anthem.
He's just having fun, right?
He's making it. Darren Revelle taught me one time where he said the key to Twitter, you do this perfectly, is 50% promotional, 50% personality.
Yeah.
Make sure someone knows if they follow you, you're going to give them a little bit of both. And Stephen Amell just does that perfectly. Like, it just absolutely perfectly.
The promotional part's easy. You know, it's free. It's free advertising. So, but you don't want to go too heavy on that. So you want to also give people an inside look at, you know, obviously they're following you for a reason, whether they like you or hate you, they're following you for a reason because they know you. So, you know, you either give them something to latch onto or something to criticize.
Now, there's something about Arrow. Let's give you the facts first, and then I'll introduce the question that I want to ask you, which is number one, he's got a new costume, looks a lot more like Justin Hartley.
It's got some armored plating and gauntlets, and you know, you can see his arms much better.
Yeah, short sleeves now.
Yes.
And it's going to do a little bit lighter. It's gonna have some magic. It's gonna have just be a lot brighter. He's gonna be funnier, and supposedly he's going to be called Green Arrow, which is
so they're adding the green. They're adding the green this season.
Yeah, I mean, they said that's always been the plan. They just never told us that, which is fine. Arrow got really dark, and that's when I say that it's not a criticism. It's just that's a choice that they made. Let me play producer.
Okay.
Well, let me play producer for a second and say that, you know, this is a genre where it's kind of uncharted territory. You know, Smallville was this huge hit, but it was an iconic character. They wanted to do another superhero show. They needed something grounded, so they picked Green Arrow. They start a Green Arrow show, but they want to make it not Justin Hartley. They want to make it something new. They want to make it, you know, harsh and intense. And, you know, don't forget, Dark Knight Rises came out the same year that Arrow debuted. They fell in love with that character. Now, Arrow's a hit, so they have freedom to make something else. And they made The Flash. And they fell in love with The Flash. They fell in love with, wow, it can be comic booky. It can be fun. It can be special effects. Yeah, you can do it on a TV.
Old-fashioned dramatics, you know, just some old-fashioned drama. Yeah.
And I think they are in a position now where they don't like their own show.
So this is their way of changing it up a little bit.
Right.
And yes. And you know, they have the freedom to do whatever they want, and you know, times change. So And to be honest, you know, when the first season of Arrow, it was good, but there was a lot of maybe too much heavy on the drama and the relationship.
Heavy on the killing?
And yeah, you know, you slept with my sister before she died and all that. So, you know, this is more, you know, the trend now is to go darker. You know, yeah, you're right. You know, Batman, Christian Bale Batman pretty much set that tone way back. And, you know, dark is cool. Which I'm all for. So bring it on.
I just think they don't like Arrow anymore. Like they just want to make more Flash. And I think that what they're going to do is they're going to make Oliver be Oliver from the comics. Because Oliver from the comics was always opinionated. He was always hot-headed. He was a womanizer. He, you know, there was a lot going for Green Arrow, and none of that translated to the TV show. Like the TV show character was totally different, and I think they decided they're done with that. And if they could, they'd cancel Arrow.
If they could
make more DC more shows, flashy. Which they got Supergirl. Right. If they could make it, if you told these guys in a perfect world. You don't forget sponsors, forget following, forget actors. If you could do Green Lantern, you could get rid of Arrow and do Green Lantern. I think they'd say yes.
I guess I could see that. And what I mean, if you look at Green Arrow, I mean, he doesn't have any superpowers. He's a guy who runs around with a bunch of money and a bow and arrow. You know, a guy with powers or a ring or super speed is much more interesting, probably easier to write for too. So I don't know. I don't know if that has anything to do with your theory. I don't know if they consciously want to cancel it, but I guess to their surprise, it worked, and they're able to do more characters that are more interesting and maybe easier to sell. Perhaps I don't know. That's a good theory, though.
Well, it's a theory, nonetheless. It's just a theory. The other big one, they did Gotham, and the kid from Shameless came out, and he is the Joker. I mean, they're without saying it, they alluded to it. Very strange that Bruce Wayne's going to be, but Bruce Wayne's going to be what, 14 years old, and the Joker is existing.
I don't know, but well, I mean, you gotta get the Joker in there somehow. Even if like what are you gonna wait, you know, 5 years until he's older? I just they're just gonna spring him out now. while they can. You gotta get him out there somewhere. You can't. I mean, how many seasons are you gonna wait till you get the Joker on the show?
I don't know. I don't. What's your take on Gotham? Where do you sit when it comes to Gotham?
I'm a fan. I love everything. So, you know, if you haven't noticed already, and I just love that something like this is on TV, that I can, that I and all my friends and 3, 4, 5 million other people can tune into it. I dig. I don't have any real criticisms for it so far. I mean, I think it's been going great so far.
But the only thing,
what are your true thoughts on it?
The only real criticism is I'll steal something from one of your podcast friends. I listened to your boy Kevin Smith do his Fat Man Batman show.
Batman on Batman, yes.
Fat Man on Batman. It's a great show. Great show. Really good podcast. But he has his co-host recently, Mark Bernardin, which I yes. will be bugging you on the air. I have to talk to this gentleman. Really oh, smart he's guy. Really he's
great.
Really
smart writer. Dude. Writer and well versed in entertainment, and a great, just a great guy all around. A great podcaster too.
Yeah. Right. He had a theory that I think is. I just don't want to steal his theory, but his theory to me sets up Gotham perfectly, which is you shouldn't have killed the Waynes in the pilot. You should have had the Waynes be characters for the first 13 episodes, 20 episodes, whatever it is. You could have had them be alive for the first season. Build them into characters you care about. Get to know the Waynes and then kill them off.
I like that. I like that a lot. I wish they're probably wishing they could go back and do that now that you mentioned that.
They killed him in the first scene, and there was a great, I don't know if it was in YouTube or Mashable did it, where they did a mashup of every one of Bruce Wayne's parents getting killed. You know, yeah. They've been killed in television cinema like 17 times.
Yeah, like a million times, and it's always the same. They're in a dark alleyway. They get shot. The pearls drop onto the wet right. street. Yeah, every time. It's like they do it every time. It's like yet again, and they did it with Gotham too. That would have been great. I would have loved to. That I think that's a great idea. Too late now, but next time they do something like this in, 20, 25, 30 years, hopefully we'll still be alive to see it. That's what they should do.
Well, I mean, look, like I said, so now they built these characters. Like, I just think if I cared about Thomas and Martha Wayne, now I'm really interested and see Happy Bruce. That's the other thing I think they could have showed you. Happy Bruce Wayne. You've never seen that.
I think there's probably a reason. I think Happy Bruce Wayne's probably not that interesting.
No, but see, that's the whole thing, because the story's not really just Bruce Wayne's story. It's Gordon and it's Bullock and the girl from V and Homeland and all this other stuff. You know, you have the crime families and Oswald Cobblepot who steals the show and all these different things. And Happy Bruce could have been part of it. It was presented on one of Kevin's podcasts. I was in my car listening to it, because that's all I listen to is podcast, not just Kevin's, but all I listen to is podcasts. I don't listen to regular radio, and fuck, I'm on regular radio.
I love it. You're broadcasting. You're like, screw terrestrial radio, podcast.
Terrestrial radio. Right. Podcasting is the future. I believe it. And
it's not even the future.
I heard it. I think I called a friend of mine who I knew watched Gotham, and I was just like, oh my God, you have to hear this idea. This is genius. This could have made Gotham a great show. It might be a good show. Now, then it could have been a great show.
Right. I wish, I'm thinking they probably wish you would have brought that up in a meeting, in a DCTV meeting, maybe 2 years ago.
Should have.
Yeah.
Should have.
Yes.
All right. We've got much more to come. Including X-Men and Deadpool and Heroes and also Supergirl, because I've got lots to say about Supergirl. But Ming, you want to tell him a story so I can make sure Lauren's mic works?
Yeah.
Tell the folks a story. Just start it with Once Upon a Time and see. Give me like 30 seconds.
Just a random story. I mean, once upon a time, a lowly Asian from Michigan wound up on an AMC TV show, and now I'm talking about Comic-Con. I actually haven't been there since 2003, and we've actually been trying to shoot at Comic-Con for AMC's Comic Book Men every year since we've been in existence. It almost happened last year where we got the cooperation of Stan Lee. Stan Lee said we could come and shoot at his booth. And, you know, you would think it'd be a natural thing for us to go to the biggest con in the world. And it almost happened until the con itself had shut it down. And they basically said, you know, listen, you can shoot. We'll let you shoot. But we reserve the right to shut it down at any time. You know, if it gets too crazy, if you violate fire codes, or, you know, if we just find some reason to shut you guys down, we will. And, you know, why would you send a 20-person crew out, fly us out there, set this all up and maybe shut it down in the first 5 minutes? It made no sense. So for anybody wondering why I'm not there and why we haven't shot any episodes out there,
that's the reason.
That
right?
is why. That is why. Right, and on. It stinks. Right, it's natural. It's natural. I would love to go back. This year would have been perfect. This year would have been awesome. We could have had Affleck on the show. We could have, you know, we could have done another thing. Would have been great.
Before we get to our guest, is there any, can you give us any spoiler whether or not Ben Affleck happened to be in the fold?
No, not yet. I mean,
is he coming on Fat Man on Batman?
That's
what everybody wants to know.
No plans in the foreseeable future, I don't believe, but I believe that it'll happen eventually. I just don't know when.
Okay,
it will happen though, for sure.
Just because you went there. All right, joining us now, save our best guest for last. This young lady, I got a chance to listen to her. She does almost as many podcasts as Ming Chen. She is everywhere, and she's promoting herself all over social media, does a great job. She's also, she writes for Entertainment Weekly. She was at all 4 days of San Diego Comic-Con. She lives in San Diego, so she's going to walk around the streets on Monday going, where did everybody go? She does a remarkable job. She's on this amazing show called Assembly of Geeks. She's also participating on this thing called the Flash Podcast. She's got so many opinions about so many things. She was a perfect recap day four guest, and she is Lauren Galloway. Lauren, welcome to the Hall of Justice. Say hello to Ming Chen.
Hi, Ming. Hello. Nice to meet you.
Hello, Lauren. I love that right before you popped onto this podcast, you were literally podcasting right before this. I love that.
That's awesome. I just did an hour with Assembly of Geeks just recapping everything. It was awesome.
Will you tell us the end if we ask better questions?
No, I have to remain unbiased in my podcast allegiance here.
Political correctness has reached this genre now. All right, this is not your first one, right? This was not your first Comic-Con, and surmise it. How do you feel on day four?
I feel amazing, actually. I thought I would be wiped out and in bed and just hangry, cranky, like con come down. And I feel so good because for me, Comic-Con is like home. Like being with that many like-minded, polite and wonderful superhero loving people, it makes me feel really good inside. And so I feel full despite the fact that my body is very, very tired.
So take me through a typical day for you. Did you go to as many panels as you can? Did you work the floor? Did you have a lot of work to do? Were you more the fan than the worker? Take us through your experience.
Did you wait in line? Like, how many lines did you wait in, and for how long?
I had a very interesting Comic-Con this year. So in Comic-Con's past, I have gone as just a fan, not really knowing a lot of people. My family and I go to Comic-Con every year. My parents and I go, we started going a few years ago and I had really just joined Twitter and I really didn't know very many people. And, you know, so you hit the panels that you want and you hit the events you want and you kind of walk the floor and you just kind of take it all in. You just observe and really enjoy everything. But the more I podcast and the more I blog and the more I write, the more people I get to know. And for me, this Comic-Con was all about building relationship. So I prioritized parties and meetups and dinners and drinks with friends over almost everything that was going on inside the convention center. So I think I spent maybe 20 minutes on the floor the entire week.
Okay.
Which I know sounds crazy because there's so much to see on the floor.
It's not, like, it's not so, though, because it's a convention. There are 75 Comic-Cons all over the country.
Right. But like for me, this is the one that I, you know, I always look forward to every year. And so it's easy to regret and think, oh my gosh, why didn't I spend more time on the floor? But I was so excited to connect with people that I only know on social media, like on Twitter and on Facebook. Tony Kim. Do you guys know Tony Kim? Crazy sure, for Comic-Con? Sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Tony, he hosted his Tony, first.
Right. Tony does he does a lot of moderating. Ming, you've met Tony, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, yeah. He's a good kid.
He hosted a first ever event Wednesday night, preview night, called Game of Bloggers. And it was at a restaurant called The Dragon Den, and he kind of rented out the patio area, or at least we got to use it. And he invited every podcaster, blogger, social media person that he was in contact with to come out to this event and really just to network with people. And I met people that I have talked to on Twitter for 2 and 3 and 4 years, but had never actually got to meet. And I mean, that was one of the highlights of the con, was just hugging people and meeting people and connecting with people.
Lauren, I think we could be great friends already. Because yeah, when I go to a con, I go to party. I don't even, forget the floor, forget all the everything else. I go to meet everybody, and it's cool in this day and age. You don't even have to meet them initially; you get to know them online before you even meet them in real life, and then they always turn out to be pretty cool.
Yeah, I got to meet Leonard Sultana. He's a British guy, and he runs something called, Englishman SDCC. I think he does like Google Hangouts and does Q&As about Comic-Con, and he's just become a really great friend online, and I've never met him. And he had another party to go to, but he was able to make an appearance at Game of Bloggers, and I just went up to him and was like, I know you're busy, but I need to hug you right now, and we need to take a picture because I love you, and this is the only time of year that I get to see you. So it was really cool meeting up with people. I did get to do some cool panels. I got to do Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Agent Carter on Friday, nice. Which was amazing because I'm a huge fan of both of those shows. I got to do the big DC TV night last night, so I got to see cast of Arrow, cast of Flash, cast of Supergirl, cast of Gotham, cast of Legends. And that was, it's just amazing to have all those people in the same room at the same time together.
Yeah, I mean, that's, it might be really cool. One of the few times of the year that happens.
Yeah, it's rare that happens. And last year, they did that panel for the first time ever, and they had all the casts on stage at the same time. That was really cool. They didn't do that this year. They just had like, yeah, they split it up. But it was still really cool to be in a room and, you know, because Hall H, if anyone listening has ever been to Comic-Con, you know Hall H. They don't just have the regular screens, but they have wraparound screen. Okay. And so whenever they would show footage of Arrow or Supergirl on the drop-down screens, they would put these huge, like, hand-painted or digitally painted comic book panels on the sides of the room, you know, and the music plays, and then the cast comes out, and it's just a really full, wonderful experience.
Very cool. Let's address some of these panels that you just mentioned. We were talking about The Flash. Was of the four shows that you mentioned in DC's realm, is The Flash head over heels the most popular? It appears that way from a distance.
According to CW's ratings, yes. The Flash had the highest ratings this season by far.
So when they had their big announcements, was that the biggest reactions? Was stuff on The Flash? And that's not to put down the other three shows. But it just seems like, you know, whereas we can nitpick at different shows, and Ming and I were doing just that before you came on the line, we can't find a complaint. Like, it is such a reach to really complain about something with this show. It's been a while since I've seen a show this well received.
Yeah. You know, I think in terms of reaction last night, each show had its own big moments. And I think the moment that really stole the entire panel was Stephen Amell coming out on stage in the new Arrow outfit.
That's awesome.
And he, you know, he pulled like a Hiddleston Loki and was like, my name is Oliver Queen, but you already knew that. And he went into this whole speech, and actors, they don't usually come out dressed in their costumes at Comic-Con. That's not a normal thing. So I think that probably got the biggest reaction. But yeah, people love The Flash. I mean, there's nothing to complain about. The characters are really well drawn, has emotional moments, it has funny moments, and it's going to get bigger because the big announcement was, I mean, there's this whole voiceover. Tom Cavanagh was doing a voiceover of Eobard Thawne, and he's like taunting Barry, and he pretty much said, you know, like, you think we have like hatred between us, like there's someone worse. And the showrunners pretty much said that Zoom is faster than Barry and faster than the Reverse Flash, and that Zoom is going to be the big bad for season two. And the fact that they're knocking two Reverse Flashes out of the way this soon, right out of the gate, seasons. I mean, that's crazy. Well, you don't just do that.
So someone more powerful than both of them.
Yeah, no, more powerful.
They want to do it before the movie. They want to do it before the Flash movie so that they can say, we did it first.
Yeah, that's what it sounds
like. It was intense. Along those lines, just settle an argument that we were having beforehand. I had this theory about Arrow. I think that the people who do the show running, these geniuses, whoever they are, they fell in love with the ability to do comic booky type stories. And whereas they made their mark with Arrow being grounded in complete reality, they don't like that show anymore, and they want to change it to make it more like streamlined, like The Flash. Do you subscribe to that theory in any way? And did anybody you talk to kind of hint that The Flash's success has led Arrow to the changes that it's had? And that if The Flash wasn't such a hit, you would see dark, gritty Arrow again in season four?
That's a really good point, and I think there is a lot of truth to that. I know just personally, being on all these different podcasts that I'm connected to, I've pretty much heard the same comments from everybody, is that people really had a problem with Arrow season three. I heard that all across the board. And I actually felt that way too, but then I rewatched all of season three and was like, oh, I get it. Like, oh, I get what they were trying to do in that season. But Andrew Kreisberg,
you have a lot of free time.
I was writing an Arrow spec pilot, and so I had to rewatch it because
I gotcha.
I was writing a script about Arrow, and anyway.
Yeah, it's kind of her job.
It was work. I gotcha. I wish I could tell somebody.
Yeah.
I wish I could rewatch Arrow. Call it work. That would be great.
any way to write Netflix off on your taxes is
yeah. Andrew Kreisberg and Mark Guggenheim, they did say that. They did say that, you know, Arrow is, like you're saying, it's grounded in a more real place, and they can go play on The Flash.
Right.
And what they said about Legends of Tomorrow was that in the way that they can play on The Flash is that they can go absolutely crazy on Legends of Tomorrow. Like take their creativity and freedom in The Flash and multiply it by 100. And that's what Legends of Tomorrow is going to be.
What's the point of Legends of Tomorrow in the sense that, is it going to be like a winter replacement series? Do they think this is going to have like a huge following? Are they launching something grandiose here? Or is this literally like, you know, most networks take time off. We got money and we're going to spend it and we're going to do this other show.
Yeah, let's give it a shot.
You know, I don't know. I mean, Andrew Kreisberg, he is a massive Doctor Who fan. And so he loves any and all realms of time travel. And they're obviously they're playing with that idea on The Flash. But now, I mean, like, if he's a producer, right, or executive producer, and he spent all this time, you know, working for other people, essentially, probably most of his writing career, he now has an executive producer credit. And so he's now allowed to play with studio and studio actors. And so I think for Andrew, he was probably like, look, DC has this rich history in time travel. We have Vandal Savage. We have Rip Hunter. I love time travel. Let's do a time travel show. And, you know, based on the success of The Flash and Arrow, the CW must have said, okay, go for it, Andrew. You know, but I think it isn't.
Yeah,
I think it is important to them, because I don't think they would have spent so much time introducing the Atom this season of Arrow if they weren't going to set him up for his own show. And I think that's part of why they really are going for Legends. But, I mean, White Canary, they're bringing Sarah Lance back. They're putting the Rogues on the show. I mean, and they're putting a lot of the things that people love about Flash and Arrow in this whole other world. And I think it's really cool. I don't know why they're doing it necessarily, but I think they're taking advantage of the opportunity to do it.
That's fascinating. Yeah. You want to jump in?
Yeah, I think, you know, instead of asking why, it's like, it's more asking why not? Why not do it? And if it hits, then great. Then we can do even more cool things. So, you know, yeah, why not?
Right. Good luck. Go for it. Yeah. I agree. All right. Based on all along those lines, I wanted to get your take on Supergirl. Now, I'm not ashamed of this, and I told you this off the air, so I'm not surprising you. I saw the Supergirl pilot months ago. This thing was leaked. If someone wants to tell me CBS didn't leak that on purpose, you are kidding yourself. I won't believe it. It's a victimless crime. The thing has had buzz upon buzz. Rachel Platten, the girl who sings that beautiful song, Fight Song, has said that its inclusion in the Supergirl trailer has helped get her song out there, and that the two synergy has been wonderful. There's nothing bad about what happened a few months ago. Now, having said that, they showed it twice. They showed it Wednesday night and then again Saturday night. What was your take on the pilot? What was your impressions? And what are your expectations for Supergirl?
So, first reaction, I really liked it. I think Melissa Benoist is adorable. I think she is perfect casting for this character. I easily liked her and found myself rooting for her. You know, she's going through a whole identity crisis. I love what she says.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, she's super cute. I really like her. I like her supporting cast. I loved Jeremy Jordan on Smash, and so I'm really excited to see him on the show. I liked him a lot.
That's Jimmy Olsen?
No, it's her like best friend. I don't know his name.
Oh, that's Winslow Schott, who's the toy
man. Yes.
Yes. Right. I really liked him in his previous shows, and so I'm excited to see him on the show. The visual effects are great. Armin, he does the visual effects for The Flash. He's fantastic. I did have a problem with it, but I was telling Scott this on Assembly of Geeks. My problem with it was just the fact that it was a pilot, and they tried to cram way too much into it. But moving forward, I don't think that'll be a problem with the show, because they'll just go into their episode style.
I'll tell you this. The one thing I didn't understand is, or let me rephrase it. The one thing I want for this show is I want her to have her own villains, and every character that to me is an essential character outside of her sister comes from Superman. You know, she works for Cat Grant. Ming, we know who Cat Grant is. You know, her mentor is Jimmy Olsen. We know who Jimmy Olsen is. Her friend is Winslow Schott. He's from Superman. The guy from Homeland that is in this organization, which we'll get to, he's Hank Henshaw. That's Cyborg Superman. It just seems like it's a lot of Superman. And the criticism that will come is if she can't stand on her own. Was that addressed at all in the panel?
That wasn't addressed at all, and it's so interesting that that's both of your perspectives on it, because you guys come from the world of comics, and so you guys, when someone says Cant Grant, you guys know who that is. I don't know who that is. And so when people were talking about the casting announcements for this show, and people were saying, oh, we're so excited to see Jimmy Olsen, I don't know who that is, because I've never read Superman comics. And so I think it's interesting that you might be worried that the show is leaning heavily on the Superman characters, and that could either be a strength for people who are familiar with those characters or a detriment, because like you're saying, she's not standing on her own. But for me, and probably a large part of the population who's going to be tuning into CBS, like, these are all new characters for them. And so I don't think it's going to be too much of a problem for like the casual viewer, because it's just all so new.
Okay. All right. What's your take, Ming?
Like I said, you gotta, the casual viewer is not going to carry, whether it's from, they're previously Superman characters or not. And, even if you're a fan, it's good to have these names coming back and even mentioned anywhere on network TV. It's just,
well, right.
I think I mentioned before, me and you come from a world where Dolph Lundgren was the Punisher. So,
right. David Hasselhoff was Nick Fury.
Yeah, exactly. Right. To see characters who can legitimately play these characters. I really don't care where they come from initially. Later on they'll flesh out things, and I'm sure
we'll see.
We'll have her own villains and from her own world. For now, I really don't even care.
All right. So then, Lauren, take that discussion one step further, and that is this organization. Hank Henshaw runs this government organization that seeks out aliens, and they try to corral and categorize or catalog or whatever the word is, these aliens. Yet Jimmy Olsen won a Pulitzer for taking a photo of an alien. I'm using Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Ming, you're going to laugh because I said this to you yesterday.
Sure.
My biggest thing with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is that takes place in a universe where they talk about the Avengers all the freaking time. And it exacerbates what they don't have, because these guys talk about Tony Stark and Steve Rogers and Bruce Banner, and it's always, oh, but we can't see them because this is the other guy. They emphasize the B team. Whereas for Supergirl, I know they can't use Superman. I don't want them to use Superman, but what kind of a world would have an organization hunting aliens when Superman's famous?
Yeah, that whole part of the pilot is the one thing I didn't like about the pilot. Personally, I don't think they should have introduced that organization until at least episode 2. I really would have liked to see the pilot be all about Kara and her deciding that she wants to be a superhero, and she kind of makes that decision halfway through, and then you go into this whole thing about aliens and the Phantom Zone and David Harewood's character, what's his name, Hank Henshaw. I don't really know how I feel about that, and I mean, it almost feels like a S.H.I.E.L.D. organization, and
right.
And I kind of wish they would have gone in a different direction.
I don't know. I like, if you're gonna play in a movie universe, or you're gonna play in this iconic universe where you have Superman, either just like the end of the pilot, right? Look, it's been out. It's been leaked for months. I'm not spoiling anything here. The end of the pilot, when Jimmy Olsen gives Kara his the cape, the blanket from the spaceship. Superman wanted to give it to him. And she literally says, why didn't he just give it to me himself? And Jimmy Olsen looks at him and says, well, he wanted you to find your own path. I was like, you have got to be kidding me. Stop.
Yeah.
Stop. He's Superman.
Yeah.
Fly over there.
Yeah,
yeah, that was a little much.
Except they're not. Yeah, except they can't show him. So, yeah, I like how you're justifying bootlegging the pilot better than any Chinese bootlegger I've ever met. And yeah, I can say that I'm Chinese. So I'm going to go and see if I can find this and watch it early now, because I have not seen it yet.
It's say that I'm Chinese. What do you mean you can't say that if you're not Chinese?
I mean, well, then you just got to use the word bootlegger, not Chinese bootlegger. That's that, apparently that's racist. So good on you for seeing it early.
Lauren, you said that you've been huge on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm sorry, I didn't want to wrap up the conversation. I don't need the last word. What's your final takeaway from Supergirl?
Okay, final takeaway from Supergirl. I totally just lost it. What was I going to say? Oh, so I was watching the pilot last night, and there's the whole thing about how Kara gets to Earth and who her family is, and that, you know, she's part of the House of L, and that whole storyline. And I love how they explain that. It feels very cinematic to watch how they do that. But I keep thinking of Man of Steel. And so I was like, wait a minute, but in Man of Steel, like, didn't Jor-El destroy, I mean, like, our children weren't born on Krypton. And so I'm watching this pilot, trying to line up the continuity in my brain, because I'm used to, like, Marvel Cinematic Universe where S.H.I.E.L.D. ties in. And then I was like, oh wait, Lauren, no, this is different. This has nothing to do with Man of Steel. It was confusing. And if I was confused,
Kara never becomes a hobo for 45 minutes.
Right.
Well, and the other idea is in the Supergirl show, Superman is iconic, whereas in the movie universe, he's hated.
Right. So like just for like the average viewer, you know, moms that's and dads confusing. And people who are just going to tune into this and they go see Batman v Superman, and then they go home and they watch Supergirl, they're going to be like, I think they're going to be really confused. And I think that's going to work against them at some point. I really do.
Yeah. This seems to be a running theme between the DC TV and movie universes and that really aligning correctly. And you're right. I think it's going to be a big problem as well.
It's wild. Well, Lauren, I don't want to keep you all night. I know you're exhausted. You did say you went to the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter. I adore Agent Carter. And you guys do an Agent Carter show, correct? You can plug all your podcasts.
Yes. So on Assembly of Geeks, on our main feed on iTunes and then on our website, we do a Peggy Carter podcast. And it's myself, Amy Marie, and Scott Murray. And Scott, he did such an incredible job with the show because, I mean, we have a voiceover guy doing an intro about Peggy saving the world. You know, we do some fan responses and some tweets and we get into our episode discussion. But, like, our commercial breaks are actual commercials from the 40s.
Oh, I love it.
So, like, you so listen smart. To our podcast. So and it's so immersive. You know, you don't always re-listen to yourself after you record a podcast episode, but I've listened to our Peggy episodes numerous times because it was just, it's a lot of fun to cover a period show like that.
Oh, that's very cool. It's a really smart idea. And Assembly of Geeks is something, search it on iTunes. If you're listening to this, check it out. The guy does a remarkable job. He's a cornball, but he's an outstanding cornball. Does a remarkable job. How do they top season one? And did they not have a plan for season two, considering the fact that a lot of people didn't think it was going to be picked up?
You know, I've heard some really interesting kind of behind the scenes discussions about season two from people who work at Marvel. And a lot of them said they were pretty, they were pretty solid. It was going to get renewed. That they were feeling really good about it. And so I know that they had broken some ideas for season two even before they had finished filming season one.
Okay.
Like they had some ideas moving forward. I think it's really interesting.
She's going to move to Los Angeles, right?
Yeah, they said something in the panel, which I couldn't tell if they were kidding or if they were serious, because James Darcy, who plays Jarvis, he was on the panel. He was there all weekend, which is really cool. And somebody said, well, how does Jarvis get to L.A. if the SSR is now in L.A.? How does that work? I think it was Michelle Fizikas, one of the showrunners. She said that Howard Stark has moved to L.A. and has started a movie studio. And that Jarvis has gone with him. And so, like, the Stark Jarvis situation is already set up in LA, that Peggy gets called in to investigate this weird murder.
Okay.
All right, look,
It's
very Howard Hughes. I mean, they're found, you know, that was the original blueprint anyways. And we're going to see 1940s LA. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very, like, art deco, very noir, very, like, LA Confidential, but, like, Marvel, which could be cool.
I mean, it's fascinating. It's the best part about it is you're not taking a character that is ridiculously rich in history, so you can take leaps and no one's going to fight it. Like, okay, so Peggy Carter, after Captain America gets frozen, she becomes this agent. She figures this out. That agency turns into S.H.I.E.L.D. Okay, that's all well and good. She goes and investigates a murder in L.A. Who knows? She can go to anywhere. Like, she can literally do anything. If they wanted to set it in England and say she wanted to go home for a little while, they could do that too. I mean, there's literally nothing that they can't do. What are they playing with as far as timeline? And I love that their level of danger is not like DEFCON 1. It's a level of danger that is based on character development, and you don't think the world's going to come to an end regardless. You know what I'm saying? I it's gripping television, but it, unlike S.H.I.E.L.D., which makes everything out to be the biggest thing ever, but you can't call Tony Stark, it just seems like Agent Carter has that right mix.
Yeah, I definitely have to give a shout out to the writing team, specifically Jose Molina, who has written for Firefly and just has a really rich history in writing for television for about 20 years. And because of doing this podcast, I've become really good friends with Jose, and we've had conversations and like his, like, as a writer, what he is most concerned about is character. 100 times out of 100 times, he believes that character is the most important thing you can write. And I think Tara and Michelle, as showrunners, I think they've staffed writers who believe in that too. And that's really cool that you can pick up on that, because it's not about this world catastrophe. There's nothing personal about that. It's about Peggy saying goodbye to Steve Rogers. I mean, that's as, like, emotional and raw as you can get. And yeah, there's Hydra and the Black Widow program, and there's all this cool Marvel Leviathan stuff thrown in there too. But, like, I think that's why the show is doing so well, because it is character driven. And I think a lot of that has to do with the writing staff.
Ming?
Yeah. And, big shout out to Haley Atwell for carrying a massive load and doing it well and with style and grace as well. She's pretty amazing.
She was great in the movie.
Yeah, but to carry a whole show, right now going into the second season, that's pretty amazing.
One last thing quick on Agent Carter, Lauren. The fact that in the Captain America, in the Avengers movie, when Steve Rogers goes to meet old Agent Carter, or Peggy, whatever you call her, does that change the air of drama because you know she can't be killed?
That's so interesting, because you know that she starts S.H.I.E.L.D., you know that she gets married, because in the video in the Winter Soldier, when Captain America's at his exhibit, you know, he sees that Peggy video, and we know that she makes it all the way to Winter Soldier, and, you know, she has a storyline in Civil War, so there's a lot of Peggy in the Marvel movies, which is really cool. I don't think it changes the drama, because, at least not for me, because she could get wounded really badly or hurt or tortured or something that as an audience member who cares about her would cause you pain. So, I mean, it is interesting when you know your main character can't die, but it doesn't mean they can't bleed and that they can't hurt.
Because, Ming, isn't that what we talked about yesterday with Star Wars?
Yeah, like, yeah.
You know, none of the guys on Star Wars Rebels are going to make it.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, I think in the end, you really don't even care. You just want to see how it unfolds. You know how it's going to end, and you still watch. You don't care. It's like watching pro wrestling. I mean, you don't care. It's still entertaining, and it's awesome.
Right. Lauren, you watch pro wrestling, right?
Yeah. All the time, man. I watch it for the dudes.
Sure. I'm sure. Yeah. Okay. All right. I could do this for hours, Lauren. You've been fascinating. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., what happens to them next? And didn't the Avengers take care of Hydra? So why do they need to constantly be fighting Hydra? And if Coulson's going to go away for 6 episodes to find some secret project that turns out to be a helicarrier, why can't Thor know he's alive?
Okay, so somebody posed this question to Clark Gregg this morning. Fantastic. I got this really cool person gave me a ticket to the Nerd HQ panel this morning with Haley Atwell and James Darcy and Chloe Bennett and Clark Gregg. And I just sat there mesmerized because they're all amazing people. But somebody asked Clark, you know, hey, you brought the Avengers their helicarrier. How do they not know you're alive yet? You know, are we going to see that? And Clark, he was so funny. He totally duped the whole audience. He's like, well, I'm so glad I can finally announce. And everyone was like, what are you going to announce? And he's all, but Marvel doesn't tell me anything. Yeah. It was a great, like, what's the word? Like fake out moment. But he said that he knows that they wouldn't be waiting on that reunion unless it was important. And I think Joss even talked about it. So it'll probably happen in Infinity War. But like in terms of the season, I think the writers are really excited to get into powered people and people with I think call them enhanced on the show because they can't say mutants.
Right, they can't say mutants because Fox owns that.
Yep.
Right. And so like just like what you were saying before, how Arrow is a very natural based show and they can play on the Flash. I feel like kind of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season one was pretty procedural and pretty normal. And now with Inhumans, now they can play and they can play with powers. And I think the way for them to really
Do you think those Inhumans are going to be the Inhumans in the movie in 2019 or whatever it is? Like none of that is, but see, that's the thing. Like they're using words that they're allowed to use, but that I'm having trouble buying. Like there's going to be an Inhumans movie with Black Bolt and all these dudes. Skye is not going to be in it.
See, that's what's interesting though, because at the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. panel, they did this because Jeff Loeb was moderating and they did this whole kind of like not reveal because we know that she's Daisy Johnson now because we saw that in the show, but they pretty much said Chloe Bennett is no longer playing Skye. She's playing Daisy Johnson. And they had this whole joke about how everyone keeps calling her Skye and there's like this jar where you have to put money in it every time you call her Skye because her name isn't Skye, it's Daisy.
Like the Tampa Bay Devil ring.
I think, I don't know if it was Jeff Loeb or if it was Clark Gregg. I think it was Clark. And he was pretty much teasing the fact that there's precedent for women to run S.H.I.E.L.D. in the comics, obviously with Peggy, but I think Maria Hill ran S.H.I.E.L.D. during the Secret War comic run in like 2005 when like Nick Fury disappears. Like I think Maria Hill is put in charge. And that seemed like a really interesting thing for him to say. Because maybe they have this really big plan to have the show really come up to movie level. And maybe...
I would love it. I don't feel it. I want to... from your mouth, that. Lauren, to God's ears. I would love to see it.
You're still waiting for that.
I mean, when does Inhumans come out? 2019, right?
I think so, yeah.
So we have 4 years... for Marissa Tancheron and Jed Whedon and Joss Whedon and the Russo brothers and like Kevin Feige to all just kind of figure out, you know what, let's just do it. Let's just put Daisy Johnson in the Inhuman movie. I mean, who knows? It could happen. Yeah. They have plenty of time to figure all that stuff out.
Just promise me in 2019, you'll come back on a show. It'll be episode 3011 of Hall of Justice. And just promise me, you'll say, I remember when.
Yeah, we'll play back this clip.
We'll play this clip. This thing is getting archived in full celluloid. It'll be on iTunes. Lauren, you're awesome. Let me ask you this.
I'm an optimist. I don't know.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Like I said, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the show. I told this to Jeff Loeb once. I said, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the show that I never miss, but can't stand while I'm watching. I can't stop watching this thing. I have to see where this goes. I care so much about these characters, and yet every time I'm like, what the hell am I watching? It's the strangest experience. I've never felt a show like that in comics or anything. I've never watched. 6 Feet Under was like that. Like 6 Feet Under, I'm like, oh my God, it's surrounded by death. Why am I watching this? But I would watch it all the time.
You're discussing pro wrestling all over again. It's the same thing. So don't feel so bad. Don't feel bad.
You're right. What was the best party? Give us one more little nugget from San Diego. What was the coolest thing you saw?
Okay. Coolest thing that happened to me at Comic-Con, and like Comic-Con for me was a little different this year. Just things that I had wanted to work out didn't work out. And Saturday I kind of had a little pity party, a little con pity party of like, this didn't work out and this didn't work out. And, I decided, you know what? It's Comic-Con. Everything is great. You just can't do everything you want to do. And I was at a hotel where they were doing press, and I went up to meet Andy from the Flash podcast.
Oh, I was like, Andy, friend. You know, yes.
I was like, Andy, what level are you on? Like, I'm going to come find you. I know you're doing press. I just want to go up there. So I'm riding up the escalator, right? And I'm riding the escalator with Greg Berlanti, because that's what you do when you're at Comic-Con. I'm like, oh, hey, it's Greg Berlanti. So I go up to this level, waiting for Andy. Tons of press stuff is clearing out, and the hotel floor is pretty empty. There's like security guards. And I look over, and there's Joss Whedon.
Hey.
And I was like, oh, hey, Joss Whedon. And I had talked to somebody the other night who said, you know, if you see Joss Whedon at Comic-Con, don't be afraid to say hi to him. He's very approachable. Because I had seen him a couple days before, and I didn't approach him. And so Joss is like talking to somebody, and I'm like, all right, well, if I get the opportunity, maybe I'll say hi. And one by one, all the people talking to Joss leave him. And he's just standing in this like empty hotel, like a lobby floor by himself. When does that happen? Okay. He had just gotten done with his big panel in Hall H. He had just received this massive Comic-Con award, and he's just standing there by himself. And I was like, oh my God, I have to talk to him.
So right place, right time. And is this new profile on Twitter that I see?
It is.
For you and Joss. Yes. That's awesome.
Yes.
And that's Comic-Con in a nutshell right there. You never know who you're going to run into.
You never know who you're going to run into. And so I'm kind of by the escalators, and he's walking towards the escalators. And I'm like, I have to talk to this man. It's Joss Whedon. So I went up to him and was like, hi, Joss, I'm Lauren. And I think he had lost his voice from doing his panel. So he was like, hi, nice to meet you. I congratulated him on his award. You know, when you meet a celebrity, it's always nice to like know what you're going to say. And I was like, you know, congratulations, and congratulations on the success of the Avengers. And I shook his hand and just talked to him for a little bit. Then I asked him if I could take a picture with him, and he said yes. So, you know, if nothing else had worked out at my...
Did you ever think of giving your phone to a person and asking them to take a picture, or you had to go selfie?
Oh, no. Selfies are the best. And here's why. Because, if someone is taking your picture and you don't know that person, you're probably not going to smile. But in a selfie, you're looking at yourself, right? And so you're like, oh, hey, look, I look silly, or I look goofy, and you're going to smile. Like, selfies are always better than regular pictures.
Oh, yeah, you can always turn it so you look awesome. You know, you get your best side in there, you look up, and everything is set perfectly.
So that was my con highlight. That and being in the Nerd HQ panel with Haley and Clark Gregg, I mean, two things that I didn't expect to happen that did, that completely made my con this year.
Do you mind, and I can edit this out if it's a dumb story, but can I ask, I went to click on your profile, and I saw, and it's telling me people who I know that follow you. Why does my favorite lunch place in the world, Sweet Tomatoes, follow you on Twitter?
They do?
Sweet Tomatoes. It says Sweet Tomatoes follows you on Twitter. I'm like, oh my God, I love Sweet Tomatoes. Why does she know about this?
What? Sweet Tomatoes? They don't follow me.
Soup Plantation and Sweet Tomatoes follows Lauren Galloway.
Whoa, Soup Plantation follows me.
I mean, you know, screw Joss Whedon, Sweet Tomato follows
I was like, oh my God, she knows comics, but she knows my salad place. Like, this is the greatest place in the world.
You know, it's just one of those things on Twitter. You just never know who follows you.
That is amazing.
They must have... I got a lot of followers recently because I was tweeting about Comic-Con, and so I haven't been able to keep track. And, you know, Soup Plantation must have just been in there.
Greatest chicken soup in the history of Earth.
Pretty good.
Oh, it's the best. Lauren, right, thank you.
Joss Whedon, why wouldn't you follow her?
Of course. She knows Joss Whedon. Of course. Exactly. Lauren, you're the best. Thank you for having me on. It's a lot of fun. You're great information. You're great on Twitter, and good luck, continued success. Is there anything, any of the Entertainment Weekly stuff, or anything that, you know, besides your 3,000 podcasts that you shamelessly promote? Is there anything else that we can help you out with?
I have started writing for a new blog and podcast called The Geek Set, and they are really just diving into this whole nerd realm. They're pretty new, so I would love to just give them a shout out there on Twitter, at The Geek Set. As always, The Flash Podcast, Andy B, Scott and Amy, we love talking about The Flash. And
What's Andy like in real life? Is he a real person?
Yep.
He's like a cartoon.
He exists. He's very high energy. Very, very, very high energy. We had a really good time in Hall H last night. They're handing out glow sticks, and I had snacks, and we were all set up, and he was live tweeting from the Flash podcast, and I was live tweeting from the DCTV podcast, and we were just in our element. We were just like kids. We were having the best time.
Cool. Very cool. Well, Lauren, thanks for giving us a couple minutes. I really, really appreciate it. And it was great that we were introduced, and I loved having you on the show.
Yeah, thank you. Look forward to meeting you at a future con for sure.
Definitely.
Be in touch. Don't be a stranger.
Okay, you guys too.
All right, Rockstar. That's Lauren Galloway, Entertainment Weekly, and about a gazillion podcasts. Like, Ming, you just heard, she probably does more than you.
I'm looking at her lineup here. Yeah, she definitely does. And she's a pro. I love it. So thanks for lining her up as a guest.
She was great. She was great. Before we, if we can just spend a minute on the last two things before we kind of call it quits, because I'll regret it. If we sign off now and I'll say, wait a minute, we didn't cover this. Heroes and Deadpool.
Yes.
I know they did the X-Men thing, but I'm sorry. I didn't see X-Men. I read about it. It never really leaked 100%. I just saw pictures.
Real quick on the, you know, they did the Fox movie panel, you know, talk about X-Men Age of Apocalypse, and then I see on the background they're also plugging Fantastic Four, which they kind of threw in there as a hopeful gesture maybe, but I thought that was funny. Where, you know, they're trying to compare
that movie's X-Men. Not gonna suck. That movie is not gonna suck.
I will be there regardless, so it doesn't matter. They've got my money.
That's right. But as far as, okay, let's do Deadpool first. We'll end with Heroes.
Okay.
Deadpool, it's taken 10 years to get Deadpool into theaters and Ryan Reynolds' chance for redemption. Does Ryan Reynolds need to do well in Deadpool because of Green Lantern?
I think Ryan Reynolds doesn't really care. Ryan Reynolds is Ryan Reynolds. Everyone still loves him regardless of Green Lantern. But, you know, judging from what I saw in the trailer, he's going to be even more popular, more awesome than he already, you know, all the ladies love him already. He's got that. And, you know, and he's a cool guy. He seems like a cool guy. He's a great actor. And this will just launch him into the stratosphere from what I've seen. I mean, the trailer looked to be a Red Band trailer. There's some cursing in it. There's some adult situations. And I think they did that on purpose. Just to assuage any fears that, you know, was going to head in a lighter, you know, in a more family friendly direction. Looks like they went all out is what I'm trying to say.
Well, and they did, but my question to you then is there something to be said for the idea that Deadpool can't make as much money because there can't really be a licensing program. Like, you can't put Deadpool in a Happy Meal and have it be a rated R movie.
You know, I think that's actually a good thing, because once they start worrying about toys and Happy Meals, that's when it all goes to hell. That's why we have freaking Fantastic Four Denny's menu items. You know, like, it doesn't, you know, worry about the movie. The movie will make its money on its own. You don't need to worry about stupid merchandising.
Yeah, I can say that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Deadpool. And then finally, you saw the Heroes trailer.
I did.
It feels like that show lost its way. I love that show. I watched every episode of that show. They lost their way and they got canceled unceremoniously.
Yes.
And now, because the genre has blown up, they can bring Heroes back. And
yeah,
Heroes is back, and half of them are coming back, but only half.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's because all the other ones have blown up, and they don't need to come back. You know, Milo Ventimiglia and pretty much everybody else.
Astar. Right.
Yeah, but I have fond memories of watching that first season, and I was like, oh my god, this is great. It was so good. It was fantastic. And you know, you can blame any number of reasons for its downfall. There was the writer's strike. It grew too big too quick, where, you know, Tim Kring is like, well, what do I do now? Like, I didn't expect this. So
he had to top himself. Yep.
He had to top himself, and they probably tried too hard. They didn't have a lot of time, you know, and they just didn't do a great job of it. And now, when was the last episode? Like 5, 7, I can't even remember how many years ago.
He said 2009? No, it had to have been more recent. 2011? I'm looking.
Yeah, 10 or 11. That's what I want to say. So they've had a multiple of years to think about this, and they know what they did wrong. So they can only use that to make it right. And watching that trailer, I'm excited. Although it's very X-Men, where, you know, with they call
it. Oh yeah, they're all. Right, they're all mutants. I mean, they don't say the word mutant, but
they're called Evos now, as in evolved humans. But the first season, the whole premise is X-Men basically for TV. Right. But still, Tim Kring does such a great job. It's great. And you know, the guys they brought back are you know, it's not Hayden Panettiere and it's not Ali Larder, but you know, you have Masioka.
Ali Larder. Oh. I love that.
You have Masioka back and as Hero, or Greg Grunberg, which was still, he's one of my favorite
Parkman.
Characters.
Yeah, he was Parkman. Yeah.
From the first one, you got some of those guys back, and they're trying to. I don't think they're gonna make too many references to the previous seasons or even some of the previous characters. They need the new audience to relate to it, and not do too many callbacks. Judging from the trailer, it looks like we might have the old Heroes back.
Yeah, I mean, there's some of them are back. Hero Nakamura, Matt Parkman, Mohinder, Suresh, yes. the Haitian, Angela Petrelli, but not the two sons,
right?
Nathan or Peter, Micah Sanders, and then of course you have Noah Bennett, who was Claire's father. Claire Pettit's dad, Jack Coleman, or HRG, Horn Rim Glasses. I'm interested. I just wonder if the you're going to watch this and say, man, if they had just continued with one more season, then you wouldn't have to do this.
Yeah, but if they had continued, it probably wouldn't have been that great. I mean, we saw where it was going. Five, six years later, we get it back again, and hopefully better than ever.
It's great. It was great. How great was Lauren Galloway?
Oh, she was amazing. I can't wait to meet her. I go to so many cons. I'm sure I'll run into her. So, I'm going to poach her. I'm going to poach her for my own podcast. So thank you.
There you go. Get her on. She's great. She is absolutely great. Well, Ming, thank you so much for doing these 4 days. I will see you this week. At least that's the plan.
You will. Come on down. Week. We are currently shooting season 5 of Comic Book Men. Come on down, my friend. Watch the magic.
I'm going to watch where the magic happens. I'll have a full report. Plus, I can say this on Hall of Justice. I am going to a Marvel screening of Ant-Man. And I'll see Ant-Man on Tuesday. So hopefully,
early. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, a little Ant-Man All-Star Game doubleheader for me. So should be an interesting story, and I'll have to do a podcast on that because
I can't wait to hear what you think of it. You know, my friends are divided. So half of them, of course, comic book geeks. They can't wait to see it. I got the other half who they're like this looks awful. I know nothing about this character. It looks awful. I'm like, you know what? Just wait and see. Did you care about Guardians last year?
I said that about Iron Man. Who are you talking about? Iron Man is the most boring comic book character unless he's drunk. Tony Stark is a boring character that they made compelling. So
yes.
There's definitely something to be said for that. All right, my man, I've taken too much of your time. Thank you again. And I'll talk to you this week.
Absolutely. And let's go to San Diego next year. Let's be there.
That's our plan. We're doing this show again in San Diego. From the convention center. So
yes, we'll have drinks in our hand, and we'll be at a baller party. So
that's exactly how it goes. There you go. Now you're knowing you is finally paying off. I'll talk to you later, my bud.
See you later.
All right, that's Ming Chen. I'm Seth Everett. This has been day four, our recap of San Diego Comic Con. I hope you enjoyed it all. This has been episode 10 of All of Justice. We will be back with episode 11, a review of Ant-Man. That's all coming up. I'm Seth Everett. See you then.